relationships, religion, reality. This is the good news on Glenn Klein Online. Humans, this is Glenn Klein Online. It is Hump Day, Wednesday, January 23rd, 2013. The only January 23rd, 2013 in the history of the world. Yes, each week at this time, we welcome online the intermediator of the good news. Please say hello to Mr. Chris Harrington.
Good evening. I love that music.
I know you do.
I really do.
That's your official theme song.
My favorite movie.
Why is 2001 A Space Odyssey your favorite movie?
Two reasons. Number one, I really, really like it. So I think about, let's see, it must have been about 15 or 16, I guess, when that came out. Something like that.
Shauna just got some comment about 2001 Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
Well, his real favorite reason is because of hearing a computer sing Daisy.
Is that why, Chris?
That what?
You like to hear a computer sing Daisy?
Yeah, Daisy, Daisy. Yeah, in slow-mo, yeah. I think he'd had maybe a little bit too much lean in the engine, you know what I'm saying?
I hear what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, this was one of those days, my friend.
It's a game changer day, that's right.
Well, first of all, you guys, just so you know, your friendly neighborhood radio talk show host was encouraged to audition for Tampa Bay's Got Talent on Saturday morning. In Ybor City at the Ritz Theater, they were looking for new radio talent, Cox Communication, 102.5 The Bone. And so I wasn't going to do it because I'm really focused on what I'm doing. But I thought, what the heck? It's Saturday morning.
Why not?
Right? So yeah. I show up there. The doors open at 8 o'clock. I show up at 8:06. There's about 200 people in front of me. And I pre-registered online. That's supposed to give you a priority number. I asked the guy at the front of the line what time he had been there at, and he got there at 5 a.m.
Wow.
Yeah. So they opened the doors, and I was there pretty much the entire day.
Yeah.
And I did my thing. I did a really good job. I did not get the gig.
But you went and tried out.
I did.
Yeah, you played.
I played.
Yeah.
So that was good.
Can't affect the outcome of the game if you don't play.
And then my son came in that afternoon on Saturday, my son Jake, who lives out in Southern California, for a kind of combo birthday celebration with his older brother Joe.
All right.
And Joe was born on January 27th. Jake was born on February 9th. And Saturday night, you guys that listened to last week's show know that Yonder Mountain String Band was in town, our favorite band in the world. And so we went to the concert as a family and with many friends. We had about 15 people there.
Wow.
on Saturday night in St. Petersburg. That was an awesome time. And then Sunday night, we had a family dinner, a combo birthday dinner for Joseph and Jacob. And then it's been an interesting week and an interesting day. Today was the day that Kimber moved out. We had been living together for about 4 months plus, and today was the day that she moved out, and that was emotional. And then you guys that have been listening to the show for a while will recall the situation that we had with my youngest daughter, Gracie, being arrested and going through that process. Well, it came to a head, at least for the time being today. She was Baker Acted, Chris, which I think is a Florida term. But basically, she was involuntarily committed to a mental institution for evaluation. Uh-huh. This evening. That was brutal. And
it's difficult to watch your kids. It's difficult to go through something like that, and it's difficult to witness whoever it is.
Yeah. And Dawn, my former wife, and who I spent the better part of 30 years with, called me later this afternoon and said this was going down. So I got over to the house quickly. And it was a scene of insanity is what it was.
So
the cops took her away in handcuffs to the mental institution, and Dawn had pretty much a nervous breakdown in front of me, and I held her and hugged her, and it's been a brutal day, bro.
I hear you. Involuntary lockdown like that. It's for, you know, it's for a number of reasons to get help people get control of their emotions and their behavior. And but I don't know if mental institution is the terminology I would use, because that conjures up all kinds of things.
Well, it's a psychiatric word, I can tell you that.
Yeah, it is a psychiatric word, but that's a very broad term. And because I've been to those situations numerous times with students and their families, and you know, what you see is something that's akin to something more like what you'd go to if you went to a rehab place where people were trying to like pull it together. But it's it is institutionalized, that's for sure, and it's not an easy process. And of course, always facing your own needs and being responsible for your actions, those are all tough things to do.
Sounds like
people could just make it happen, but that's a lot of intellectualization. It's way difficult to do it when you're there.
One of the things that I've seen as a common denominator for people that are struggling in their lives, and I would include, of course, myself in this, is that even as they get older, but whether it be young people or middle-aged people, doesn't make a difference, they have a tendency of blaming, or I will say this way, we have a tendency of blaming other people, situations, circumstances, for our problems.
Sure.
Why is that?
Shifting blame, why is that a natural thing for human beings to do?
Yes.
You know, Adam, you know, is like, dude, you know, this woman over here, she's like had this apple, and I was just minding my own business, and, you know, and God's like, hey, what's with the fig leaf? That's new. And he's like, well, you know,
it's that woman.
That woman that you gave me. What can I say?
Adam blamed God and blamed Eve in the whole thing.
Yeah, it's everybody's problem but mine. You know, why do you? Who's asking?
Who's asking?
Who wants to know? It's a need to know basis. Who wants to know?
Why do we do that?
Because it's an attack on our identity. We have propositioned the universe with the dubious distinction of having created a sort of avatar, an ego, that stands for us. Because it's difficult to stand there naked and see things as they are, and life is very complex, and it's difficult to be humble and just understand and accept. If that were easy, we could all just do it, you know, on command. We just would be there and be like, wow, this is so awesome. But we don't want to be admiring of that. We want to be admired. And so we proffer this concept called an ego, and it's a representation of us like an avatar. And on the inside, we might be milquetoast, but on the outside, we're standing up like we're tough. But, you know, an asteroid could take us out at any moment, we forget. So it's a way that we fake our way through. We pretend, we present, you know, we play the game. But it's a way of faking our way through. And we don't want to be disclosed, you know, don't pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Right.
You know, all that kind of good stuff. Don't rat me out, we'll say to people. Don't rat me out. And really, people don't want to rat on each other because they know how desperately they want to keep from disclosing their own stuff. And so they're more likely to say, I will uphold your fakeness rather than relieve you of the stress of keeping all these plates going and actually being honest with you. You know, and even when they are honest, sometimes people have to be raving lunatics. They have to be so angry. It's like they finally give themselves permission to say the simplest things, and they scream and they rant and they rave and they say, you know, you are doing something that I could just tell you really easily, but it's too hard because I don't want to rat you out. So it's a lot of gameplay, and that's what it is. A lot of mind games.
That's what happens. This is Glenn Klein Online. That's Chris Harrington. It's Chris Harrington's Reality. Sean O'Halloran is in tow. If you guys want to call tonight, the numbers are available to you at 1-800-436-3260. That's the toll-free line, 800-436-3260, 813-425-5773. Love to hear from somebody out there. I know most of you guys listen on the archive, but we are available live. It is Wednesday night, January 23rd, if you're listening live, and it's a little after 10 minutes after 9 o'clock on the east coast of the U.S. of A. You're listening live, and you feel free to call us if you want to talk to Chris and have any input or any questions. So, all right, so my daughter, Gracie, is in this mental ward for evaluation. What is she looking at in the next 72 hours or so?
First off, they want to make sure that she's secure and calm down, and so that may or may not have anything to do with medication. It may have a whole lot to do with different kinds of therapy. There are 400 different kinds of counseling therapy, so they might pull any number of things out of the hat in order to attempt to get her to calm down and be more realistic and more accepting of reality as it is, according to them, you know. Now, she's at, what is she, 15, 16?
She's 16.
She's 16, so she got her own reality about how things go. We all do. And so 16-year-old reality is going to be way different than what adults will project. And because she doesn't have a mortgage and she doesn't have all these different things that she could lose a job and all these different things in her relationship and all these different things that adults are like, you know, you have to do this, otherwise you're going to lose all your stuff. And young people don't look at it that way because they haven't been around long enough to invest that much in it. They're much more concerned about their cell phones and their relationships, even cyber relationships rather than even, say, relationships with family members, because they put a lot of stock on that end of it for a good reason. You know, that's where they get a lot of positive imagery from. But what she's looking at over the next, probably, they could probably keep her for like 14 days, maybe 11 to 14
well,
days, something
like
that.
The cop that took her today, there was a woman and a male deputy sheriff.
Uh-huh.
He's told me that this particular situation would be at the most 3 days.
At the most 3 days.
That's what he said.
Wow.
And he also said that under normal circumstances, he would not have Baker acted her or arrested her.
Uh-huh.
But she almost demanded to be taken out of the house.
Right.
And Dawn and I were like, she needs help. I mean, she needs some medication. She's on medication.
Something needs to happen, right?
So, I mean, this has to move forward at some level. And they were cooperative. But he said it would be a max of 3 days unless she does. I mean, she's capable of demonstrating. I mean, she's been what amounts to pretty psychotic or schizophrenic over the last four or five days. And it's been intriguing because we've had some really nice family moments over the last 5 days since Jacob has been in town. And she, I can't say she was disruptive, but she was certainly not in her right mind during like family dinner. Yeah, she was agitated. She was all over the board. It was bizarre. I mean, it was strange, and it was sad to see. Obviously,
people's inner world when it bubbles up to the surface. I call this the mashed potato syndrome. Right? You take mashed potatoes, you get a fistful of mashed potatoes, and hold your hand really tight and cause a vacuum seal around the potatoes, and then squeeze. Those potatoes are going to come out somewhere, through your fingers or out the end where your thumb is or out the other end where your little finger is. They're coming out somewhere. And so what happens is that people might be able to have a facsimile of having it together, but under the interior pressure of needing to communicate, needing to perform, needing to force an issue to the surface, that stuff's going to bubble out somewhere.
All right. So that's what happened.
That's how it is.
Well, I am in an interesting place tonight. And I spoke with you earlier and suggested that I really didn't want to do the show tonight.
Right.
And you said, basically, the way I took it, sometimes when you don't want to do something and you do it, those are kind of important moments.
Yeah, they're very important moments because it says to you, I've now increased my tolerance limit for what I'm able to go through. And that's a very important step to always say to yourself, can I wait a few more minutes? Can I hold off before I get reengaged with this? Can I stop myself from reacting so that I'm able to pull it together enough to respond from my center?
Now, interestingly enough, when going through crisis like this and the way that my life has worked out, I've usually been able to shut it down. Pretty much my time's been my own throughout my professional career over the last 30 years or so. And yet today, and I mean, it was a tough day. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
I conducted business, and I have to say that as I was thinking about things this evening, I was kind of excited. I'm just being frank right now. There was a level of excitement about what I have to do in these coming days, about making my list, about making my budget, about going forward in my business plan, and continuing to do the work, and also realizing, coming out of my relationship with Kimber, that I don't have an account that is capable of funding a relationship right now. And I don't have the time, I don't have the finances, I don't have the emotion, I don't have the energy right now to engage in a romantic relationship.
Right, you're talking about your emotional bank account in terms of funding it, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's not there, I can't do it right now. And that's healthy. I never thought about it in those terms before, but I know coming out of this relationship, after having had three pretty significant relationships, two very, very significant relationships, I would include Dina in that grouping. I mean, so three over the last 2 years that has taken a lot out of me and probably a lot out of the ladies, Carla and Dina and Kimber.
Right.
Not to mention my relationship with Dawn, it's pretty much enough. And I've got to spend some time alone, which I really never have in my life.
Well, you got to be in a position where you have something to offer that you can stand to be with. You know, people are often in a big hurry to get in a relationship, but if you don't like yourself, and you're going to try to pawn off this fake pretending self to someone else, it's going to be pretty difficult for the other person to really honor and cherish and see that as a gift.
I have always, even up until this moment when you just said that, have always felt, especially since the gospel's come into my life, that I kind of like myself.
Sure.
And are you implying that I don't so much?
No, I don't think that it's that we don't like ourselves, and I'm including myself in the situation that you're talking about, going through my own stuff. And I think it's that sometimes we look at our own stuff and we go, gosh, you know, I've got a lot I need to work on here. Can I afford emotionally to take away from the amount of energy and resources that I need in order to work on myself, in order to engage honestly, straightforwardly, you know, with reciprocity, another human being right now? I mean, it's just a point of self-honesty. You're telling me, I'm hearing what you're saying, and you're saying, I don't really have enough energy to take on myself and someone else right now. I got to work on me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's a point. At this moment right now, you're recognizing that. Before, you might have had the attitude, well, I still have more checks, so there must be more money in the bank.
But having checks doesn't necessarily mean anything. It never occurred to me, certainly over the last 2 years. Well, it's never occurred to me that I couldn't handle my stuff and a woman in my life. It never occurred to me before. Now it's occurred to me. I mean, it is more than occurred to me. It took, for whatever reason, these three people and my experiences with them to realize that I'm not capable right now of handling my stuff and the added challenge of having a relationship. I'm not saying they offer
a whole lot, and it's wonderful to have another person in your life, and it's a beautiful thing to have companionship and to be able to hold hands and walk down the beach and all that. But if you're walking down the beach with somebody and your mind's not there because you've got so much stress that you're not capable of being present, you're not doing that other person a favor.
Yeah, but my challenge has been that I have been able to be present, but I haven't been dealing with the other issues.
Right.
And that's been my challenge.
Yeah.
And no, I'm all about companionship, and I obviously I will have relationships from the standpoint of friends and dates,
sure,
and stuff like that.
Sure.
But as far as investing my whole being into providing a safe place for another human being, I can't do it right now.
Right now, yeah, that's right now. So you're recognizing what the needs are, you know, and it's a delicate balance with human beings, because no matter what we do, we're never absolutely safe. No matter what we do, we're never absolutely on top of it. No matter what we do, we are not going to know it all. So there's never going to be a place where you could say to yourself, I have this so much together, I'm sitting in the driver's seat, I'm Captain Picard, or I'm, you know, whatever, and I'm driving the whole ship, because that's never actually going to happen.
Right.
You know, but you can have a better feeling about things, and you can say, you know what, as much as I'm stumbling, I can afford now emotionally to be in a relationship with somebody, and I'm not going to be a hazard for that person. So you're in a really good place of knowing what your boundaries are and what your limits are, and that you're doing other people a service in the moment, and that's a really positive thing.
I was having
if in a relationship, you know, after the third or fourth date, sometime in the future, you said to someone, you know, 6 months ago, 8 months ago, whatever, I wasn't ready for a relationship because I was dealing with so much stuff. I just had to take time out of my life to make sure I dealt with the things that were on my plate because I want to be able to be present in a relationship. How does that sound?
Well, it'd have to be the right type of person to hear that, obviously.
Yeah, it would be. How does that sound?
It sounds good.
Yeah, it sounds honest and real and mature. And if the other person is able to hear that, you probably are looking at the right person. If they're not able to hear that, maybe you should pass that person by. You don't know what I'm talking about? Oh, well, great. Thanks anyway.
Yeah. You know, I was having dinner at the restaurant next to the studio here,
yeah,
right before we went on, and I was sitting and having dinner by myself. And you know that hasn't happened very often for me, except when I've been on the road traveling. And this guy that I've seen at this joint many times, he came up to me and he said, I have never seen you here without a beautiful woman on your arm.
Mm.
And I was like, get used to it, buddy. This is Glenn Klein Online. It is Wednesday night. If you want to talk to us, you can call us at 800-436-3260 or 813-425-5773. We're going to take our break now, and right. We'll be back.
Should stay, I would only be in your way. So I'll go, but I know I'll think of you every step of the way. And that is all I'm taking with me. So goodbye. Please don't cry. We both know I'm not what you need.
Do the commercial tonight. Send that out to my girls, Gracie and Kimber. When they were putting Gracie in the squad tonight,
yeah.
I went over there and, you know, she puts on this great front, you know, like she's a tough little girl.
Sure.
And she is a tough little girl. And I just went up to the police squad and through the window I just said, baby, I love you, you know. I kind of tapped my heart and she broke a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's brutal, dude.
Intense, absolutely intense. Being yeah. a human, being alive, it's intense. We forget and we take it for granted, but I'll tell you, every single breath is intense. We forget that.
Sometimes people forget to breathe because the stress is so much.
It's
kind of like
the truth.
It's kind of like
the absolute truth.
It's kind of like being in the gym. You know, you're under the stress of the weights.
Yeah.
And you got to remind yourself to literally breathe.
Yeah.
And I always use that as an analogy for folks. I mean, literally, you guys, you've got to breathe. You got to.
Yeah.
And you got to breathe. And that was tough stuff, bro.
Yeah, man.
All right, I know you got some good stuff for us yet.
I do.
Yeah, all right, go for it.
Well, I'm a very visual person. I'm always trying to come up with metaphors and illustrations that we can use. Sometimes one thing I'll come up with doesn't work, but I'll come up with something else, and somebody will go, wow, that really says it for me. So I tend to move through visual patterns quite a bit, and I want to share two with you tonight and then an explanation, okay?
Yes.
So first one is just in terms of, this is a page that you could find on my Facebook page. It's called The Spiral of Life is the Story of Everyday Living. And it has a picture or several pictures of things that have spirals in them, shells and different plants and hurricanes and a funnel cloud and some different things. And then it has this illustration in the middle, and it talks about the stories. And how stories work is that characters work through conflicts by making choices and performing actions. And then if they work through the conflict, they learn something by that, and that's called the theme. So characters work through conflicts through the plot in order to learn the theme. And when they do that, the first time that they do it, it's so magnetic and so fantastic, they think they've invented toilet paper. But after they've done it one time, the next time when they see exactly the same pattern, they go, ah, that's a so-and-so. We know that one already. So the string shortens just a little bit. So instead of going in a circle, they actually go in a spiral. And every time that they see that same thing again, they get closer and closer going, ah, the answer, ah, the answer, ah, the answer. And then finally, after a little while, they don't even recognize the pattern as being an aberration anymore because they're so used to it. So we see these patterns of spirals in our life all the time. And when we hit a new one, it really takes us for a loop. And instead of it being a shorter string, it might take us a little bit longer to get through it. So if you find yourself going in circles, you know, try pulling in the rope a little bit so that it'll spiral in so you can get closer to the center. It's a very interesting metaphor. How can I make this go a little faster? Well, the longer the string, the more I struggle with this, the more I allow it to beat up on me, the more I revisit it, the longer it's going to take for me to actually get this. Some people will say, they call it bottoming out. If you hit bottom, that means that you shorten the string up so much that you just look directly at the center of things and you went, wow, this is how it is. And for those people who are extremely practical in their thinking, they can have, their string can be so short that they just look at something and they go, nope, or yep, just like that. It's pretty, they can be almost brutal to other people like me who are, I'm very visual and it takes me a little while to get a hold of things and really kind of understand it. I want to, you know, look all around it. And they're like, look, you know, this isn't a vacation, this is this, and we're getting with it. So that kind of thinking is tough for some people. But that's where you are right now. You had a day where your string got shortened a little bit. You got a little closer to the center, like a lot, all in one jolt. And so you're like reeling from that. It's like, wow, this has really, really got me. But what's happening is that you got a really good look at it, really quick, really fast, real hard, really intense. And you're instead of reacting to that and, you know, falling apart or lying on the ground or not doing the show or whatever you might have done, you went, okay, I have stress in my life. I don't have my emotional bank account completely full. I'm not, you know, completely flying with all my gauges working right now. So I'm just going to take it easy and allow things to just kind of work out a little bit. Is this a struggle? Yes. Is it something more than just intellectualizing it? Yes. Is it extremely practical and very difficult to do while you're there? Yes. But I'm realizing that and recognizing that. And so I can give myself an extra 30 seconds or extra 30 hours, and I I can work in that frame reference because I can see it working. It's spiraling in on itself, so I can finally get a hold of it. It'll be small enough in a few days where I can get my head around it.
Both these things that happened today were a time in coming. They were not instantaneous. I mean, it was almost, both of them, a logical conclusion at this moment.
Yeah.
How different is that when you can see kind of things coming and sort of, I mean, on some level, prepare yourself?
A good thing if you do, but if you're not paying attention.
Yeah, but what about things that happen literally out of the blue, like the parents that lost the kids in Newtown, Connecticut?
Right.
Or, you know, my son Jacob is flying back tonight from Tampa to Southern California.
Right.
God forbid that plane goes down. We're not expecting
right.
that. What is the difference between things you can kind of see coming, which still, I mean, I've been hit hard by these things.
Again, different personalities handle that differently. Some people live off their expectations and their projections. Some people are very realistic or even hyper-realistic about things, and so they have planned all this stuff out ahead of time, and they can be almost deadly without emotional expression whatsoever because they're so prepared for the negative. So
even when things come out of the blue completely?
Yeah, some people are capable of, especially people in the military. Some people in the military have the ability to switch. This takes an extremely specialized psychological profile, but some people can actually just switch on a dime and they're ready to go. Imagine if you're in the Army or if you're in a police force or if you're dealing with dangerous chemicals or you're in the fire department, you don't have time to sit and think through these things. It has to be automatic. And I think that's why military training is so it pushes on you psychologically so much. You can't have you hurt my feelings in the when you're out in the war, you know, in the zone. You have to be able to go, regardless of how I feel, I have to continue going and survive this situation. And so some people can train for a situation, they can train along a line of thinking, and they can prepare for any event that happens. You know, they'll make it through that. They might later on, you might go into shock, or post-traumatic stress disorder. But in the moment, you are trained to be able to make it through that. And some people actually have done that for themselves over time, trained themselves to be able to get through really difficult situations. I imagine that the police who deal with these shootings and stuff, that some of those people take it one way, and some of them are so well trained that they can absolutely just work right through it regardless.
Is it their training or is it their genetic makeup? I mean, I thought about this often.
I think that some people actually have that switch, and you can. I've heard of people being tested for that. Some people actually have that switch of being able to say, not affected by that.
I mean,
some people are a sight of blood and they pass out.
Right.
Other people, they can roll it around on their hands.
I've thought about, like, the guys that were in Vietnam. We could transfer to the guys that have and women that have experienced Afghanistan and Iraq.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got John McCain, who spent, I think, about 5 years in the Hanoi Hilton as a prisoner of war.
Sure.
And he's been very, for example, he's been very adamant against waterboarding as torture, much to the dismay of his political party.
Yeah.
But he just made a joke about it with John Kerry going up for his confirmation hearings before the Senate that he was going to waterboard him. He literally made a joke about what he considers torture. He was tortured. And then you have other guys that go, and he becomes a U.S. senator, and he becomes a presidential nominee of his party. Then you have other people that have experienced similar stress, and they're on the streets of Tampa and Houston and Nacogdoches right now as we speak.
Yeah.
Why is that? Why do some people have similar stresses in their life and go off the deep end, and other people, it seems to be the very springboard that propels them to some pretty cool things?
Well, I think that there are genetic predispositions to things.
I also really believe in positive psychology, which purports that you can teach people to be more optimistic. That is, optimism is the self-expression that says, I'm capable of making a change in my life due to the choices and actions that I choose to make. All right?
Yeah, that's, I was talking with Dawn about that after the police took Gracie away today.
Right.
And vis-a-vis my situation with Kimber, et cetera. And she said, you know, given the same circumstances, people make choices. And I said, I don't know. I mean, I'm open. I mean, I'm obviously
some
in a very...
Some people do. But, some people do.
But why...
Let me give one more illustration that might be helpful in this area, all right?
All right.
You know what the Doppler effect is?
I'm familiar with the term. I couldn't define it.
Okay. What happens is that as something's coming at you at the speed of light, it has a sort of a red shift to it. But as it passes by you and it leaves you, it has kind of a blue shift. It has to do with the relative length of the wave that's passing you. When it's coming at you, it seems to be longer. When it passes you, it seems to be shorter because you see it all stacked up. It's a perception issue, okay? And what happens is in the distance when we're talking about things, as they approach us, they get bigger and bigger and bigger. And when they're right on us, they're humongous. Like even a fly right in your eye would be like the whole size of your eye.
Yeah, it goes
in, right inside your pupil.
And if it goes in your mouth, a fly is a big problem.
It is a big problem. But as it passes away and starts flying down the other end of a football field, it gets smaller and smaller, right? So it's big coming at you or red coming at you like a stop sign or like an emergency, but it gets bluer and sadder and smaller as it leaves going the other direction. So there's sort of an emotional Doppler effect that we've got in our lives. And if we want things to be more distant, we've got to be forgiving and tolerant and understanding and see it in perspective and allow things to go ahead and leave. But we don't always do that. And a phrase that you and I have been kind of batting back and forth is this whole idea of morbid curiosity.
Chris, a good example of the Doppler effect for somebody to visualize is a ambulance siren.
Yeah.
It's, you know, getting louder and louder coming at you. Then as soon as it passes you, it's longer and lower and stretched out and the lower
That's
pitch.
Right. That's exactly right. That's a very good illustration. And that's one that we can hear all the time. You can actually practice that and listen and find out. You can project, you know, if you know those things, you can project which way that an ambulance is going by the tone of it. That's right.
Not only that, but having experience with the ambulance or with crises or emotional stress, you know, the more you have them, you know, it's not making it any easier while you're going through it, but you know you've been here before, and then that ambulance did pass, and you can't even hear that siren anymore.
Right. That's right. And, you know, it's like living next to a railroad track when you first moved there. You know, every night is like a hurricane in your ear, but after living there for 3, 4, 5 years, that you don't even hear the train at night.
In college, I lived literally on top of a bus stop in Madison, Wisconsin.
Oh, my God.
And I thought it was going to drive me absolutely insane.
Yeah.
And I got myself a fan, and I would turn the fan on, even though it's very cold in Wisconsin, right now and in the winter, every winter.
Uh-huh.
And so I had that fan running, but soon enough, relatively soon, you hardly ever heard the buses stopping and the brakes and the sound
background
of the diesel. No, yeah, it just went away. Yeah. You're right. It's like living next to a train track.
Well, I was going to unpack this whole idea of the morbid curiosity.
Yeah, I got an issue with that term, but go ahead.
Yeah, and what I want to do is I want to get to the morbid part of it. All right. It's a double term, so I want to. Curiosity is kind of stands on its own, but it's the morbid part, the deadly part of it, right? Because morbid is like having to do with morbidity, you know, the death rate. it has to do with, you know, it's killing us, all right? This is curiosity that's just killing me. And so I want to use some other terms for a minute and just kind of go through a bunch, and let's see if we can unpack this a little bit.
All right.
If you're looking back just to check and see, right, like over your shoulder, you want one last look, right? Wanting to know, taking a peek, asking one last question, needing to say goodbye. You know, like little kids, they'll come in and get, can I have a drink of water? Mom, I'm hungry. Mom, I have to go to the bathroom. Yeah. It's like they're supposed to have been in bed like an hour ago, but they're still coming up with more and more needs. By now, he's like had like 14 drinks of water. So needing to say goodbye, needing justice, needing forgiveness, one last taste, a bad habit, an addiction, wanting fairness, hearing that voice, getting the money, revenge, envy, hurt feelings, wanting to be fair, needing closure, excuses, neediness, helping, I just want to be a help, just want to be there for you, just getting your old stuff back or giving something back to somebody else, having a hunch, trying again, hooking up, one last fling for old time's sake, this time will be different, rolling the dice, I know it'll work out. In other words, what people are saying is that I'm willing to take, I'm still hooked on this slightly, and I haven't quite had enough pain. When you had enough pain, you go, I'm done with this, because the opposite of love is indifference. Not hate, but indifference.
Yeah.
So at the point where you're indifferent, you no longer have a morbid curiosity.
I heard...
It doesn't matter either way.
Right. So somebody once said, love me or hate me, just don't ignore me.
Just don't ignore me. That's right. Yeah. That's right. So if you're indifferent to the situation, you're able to let go of it. You're able to walk away. You're able to go unchained. You know, Prometheus Unchained. You're able to go on about your business.
Yeah. So, but how do you
and
do
be
that?
Free of it.
You've got these great philosophies, Mr.
Yeah.
Intermediator. But what you're talking about is like literally affecting your emotions. How do you do that from a practical standpoint?
Well, again, you know, it's like the thing I gave the illustration about the cigarettes. I'm not asking you to give up cigarettes all in one day. I'm just saying that you can cut it down. And it's a learned behavior, and this is a skill, and therefore it's learnable, all right? It might be a talent. Some people might have an innate talent to be able to say, I'm done with this situation. You did that? I'm done. We're finished, just like that. You know, you chew your food the wrong way or whatever. I'm done with you. That's a deal breaker for me.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think in a lot of ways, most of what we deal with in life is something that this is like classic road rage. Somebody cuts you off, and then you got to follow him for the next 15 miles, beeping your horn and trying to run him off the road and giving him, you know, the sad finger. And then you have to be screaming the whole time. And you got your kids in the car, and your wife is terrified, and the other guy's wife is in the car, and his kids are terrified, and everybody's going completely nuts. And it's all about he was switching lanes and got into the space in front of you. And now we got, you know, 8 or 10 people are now all emotionally, physically, psychologically at risk because you can't let go of it.
Right.
And that's what happens is that in a clear-cut case like that, you can say, look, man, just stop jacking with this because you're going to get in a wreck and make it 10,000 times worse. Oh, no. I got to have justice, or I got to have peace of mind, or I got to have whatever it is. Whatever it is I have to have, you really seriously don't have to have that.
But there's an addictive quality to all that.
Absolutely.
Right. So how do you overcome those kind of emotional addictions?
Two different ways.
Hold on for a second.
Get in a wreck and lose your family.
Say that again.
That will cure you.
Yeah. I guess I will.
That'll be costly, but it will cure you.
Yeah.
Right? Or you could just simply say, all right, I yelled at the guy and I gave him the finger, but now I got to go because I got to go to the house and meet my family. We're going to go out to dinner. All right? Next time you say, next time I'm going to grumble at the guy and I'm going to hope that 1,000 fleas infest his mattress, whatever, right? So each time you have to lower the bar until finally there's some people just don't drive well.
So this is a conscious decision, isn't that what you're saying?
It's a conscious decision. You have to work at it.
You got to be aware of it, and you got to make a decision.
Right.
And then you kind of wean yourself off.
Right.
Interesting.
Right. So let's go back to the intermediation objectives from way back to the beginning, right?
All right.
You have an introduction where you find the tone and mood. You ask the questions, what are the issues? You create an awareness of the total context of the intermediation. You're working it through each area of concern until it's mastered. And then finally what happens, you're able to release and let go, and then you do follow-up things. And how you do follow-up in that situation is you share that story with other people, and when they say, how do you do that, you can say, well, here's the path I took. And then at the bottom of the page, on that same page, it says that there are no rules about how to do this, but there are three things to keep in mind. Everyone is equally worthy, right? Your idea and my idea, equal ideas. Yours might be way more effective for you, and mine might be way more effective for me. Number two, your path is your path. It's not for other people, so you don't have to force on anybody else. But three, this is so important. As soon as you formulate a rule, you need to intermediate all over again, because if you dogmatize the whole thing, right, as soon as you turn it into a dogma, now it's a rule that's going to beat you up, because there are always going to be exceptions to the rule.
Right, but give me an example of a rule.
Okay, let's say, for example, someone cuts me off, and I have now learned to let it go. So every time somebody cuts me off, I'm going to just let it go.
Right.
Okay? I'll let it go. I got plenty of nutcases in the world, lots of people like. For some reason, the space in front of me smells like patchouli oil, whatever it is. They just love that space, and so people just have to have it. All right, but now a guy moves in my space, and he's drunk on his butt, and he's in front of me. Now, it's pretty obvious to me that in the next 3 miles, he's going to have a major wreck and kill some people.
Okay.
All right? Now I got to get on my telephone, and I got to call the cops, and I got to say, there's a guy, he's in front of me, here's his license plate, we're at such and such a mile marker, he is drunk on his butt, and he's getting ready to take out 5 lanes of traffic, and I'm kind of following him and slowing down a little bit to kind of give him the idea that he could slow down too, but nothing I do seems to be making a difference. I need somebody to come and deal with this guy, because he's a major wreck waiting to happen.
Right.
All right? So there are certain times when you need to, you know, be able to apply a little bit of pressure to the situation, not because it's your ego, but because it's your humanity. And your humanity kicks in and says, you know, we need to, as a species, we need to take care of each other a little bit more and watch over each other. And that guy probably, you know, he's maybe drunk on his butt. He doesn't want to take out 5 lanes of traffic. He's just having a bad day, or he's alcoholic, or he's whatever. Whatever his issue is, however that happened, is not the point. The point is right now, where is he and what's he doing, and how can you deal with that? You know, but I think that taking a little bit more time and a little bit more interest in people when it's pretty obvious and necessary, you know, that tolerance that we can build in there is really, really, it's really important. Sometimes we snap at things too quickly, and we react to things, and we lose the teachable moment, not only teaching other people, but, you know, learning ourselves.
Even if we've come up with a good response versus a reaction,
right?
It's you're saying don't even get dogmatic about what is seemingly a good response.
Right. Don't get married to that. Yeah, and where I'm coming from, philosophically, I've talked about this before, but, you know, epistemology is the study of the way that we know things, and there are 7 branches, and the one that I have chosen to take as my banner is induction. And what induction does is it's the creation of general concepts due to, you know, stacking a bunch of specifics all in a row. And the illustration I always give is about crows. So crows are black, right?
Yes.
Except for the ones that are albino.
Yes.
And the ones that were messed up by scientists who like to mess around with their genetics. Plus then you've got the ones that are, you know, genetic problems themselves because they're mutants, right? So how long can we continue this whole line? They're not just black. They're whatever happens along the way. And the more information I get, I have to change my perception along with that. Otherwise, I get married to a perception that is no longer valid. It's you know, been totally obsolete for a long time. But I'm still pumping that same, you need to keep taking a right, because that's what we do in my family. In our family, we take rights all the time. We never go left. So, boom, you're going around the block and around the block and around the block and around the block. So at a certain point, there's a need to, you know, even check your dogma at the door and take a look at the live information that's in front of you as you go and try to interpret and extrapolate and understand as you go. And that's only going to happen if your mind is free and open and available and capable. That doesn't mean that you don't have standards of operation or morals or sensibility or common sense. It just means that you're not ruled by anything other than the data that's in front of you, and that you believe that you're logically present and capable of responding in the moment from your center. And that's a skill, and I'm telling you, I can intellectualize this stuff all day long, and I still struggle with it. But I know that the sense I have, and what I'm in talking with a lot of other people and reading a lot, the sense I have is that our best step is our most effective step. And that means that it can't be about us. It's got to be about all of us. We've got to operate interdependently. And that means my understanding your stuff and why you're doing it, even if I don't know you.
What do you mean by understanding your stuff?
You know, like I was talking, I've been writing about my panic attacks online the last week or two, and one of the things I noted was that, you know, I have way less panic attacks now than I used to. I still have them once in a while, and they're devastating. But for those people who have never seen a panic attack, and for those people who are observing my writing about it, they will say things like, well, just get over it, or just don't do that.
Right.
You know, choose,
right.
Make a better choice.
Right.
Okay? And I'm saying, when you're in the water and you're gasping and the water is now entering your throat and it's going down into your lungs, this is not an intellectual process.
Yeah,
it's a biochemical thing.
Right, it's not something you can turn on and off.
Yeah, it's not something you can turn on.
You got to get your ass out of the water is what you got to do.
It's not happening that way.
Sometimes you can do it yourself. Sometimes you need rescuing. Sometimes you can't do it.
Yeah, but it helps if the other person has an understanding of what you're going through. You know, because I took all those life-saving courses all the way up through the top life-saving things, and it finally got down to when I went through my senior life-saving and all that, the guy that I had to save was about 6'4", and outweighed me by about 50 pounds. And he struggled and took me to the bottom of the swimming pool.
Wow.
And he said, sometimes you got to clock people and knock them out and bring them back up by the chin. Otherwise, they're going to take you down with them. So it's important for all of us to know, you know, what the, as they say in the music man, you got to know the territory.
Well, we are in sometimes uncharted territory, but we're happy to have our GPS guy, the intermediator, Chris Harrington, with us. Sometimes GPSs go down, but they're always good to have, nonetheless.
It's true.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, love you, man.
Love you, too. That's Chris Harrington. We'll do it again next time. Lord willing, and if the creek don't rise. Sean, thank you very much. Thank you guys for listening, and hopefully we'll do it again next week. Hope you enjoyed it and got something out of it. Until next time, this is Glenn Klein Online saying shalom, everybody.
Good night.